Gangland Wire is probably the best podcast going at the moment. Gary and Aaron do a fantastic job, and with their range of guests that they bring in, people that have solved the crimes, or even people that have committed the crimes, it really adds some insight into the fantastic true crime stories that they pick on the podcast. If you're new to Gangland Wire, I really would recommend listening to the 7-part interview with Martin McNally. It is some of the best true crime journalism I think I've listened to.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced 4 documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. It's good to be back here in the beautiful Ice House in Midtown, Kansas City. We are into the second episode of a really bad dude named Mad Sam DiStefano. I'm here in the studio with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Well, Aaron, that Mad Sam is quite a dude, isn't he?
I'm not sure why he's so mad.
I mean, well, by mad, he's crazy.
Yeah.
He's a psychopath.
Not like he's upset.
He's not upset, though. He's always upset. He's upset with everybody, so I can use that as an excuse to go work on him with a blowtorch or something and take him down in his torture room.
In his basement. Yeah, well, wait a second. Well, I wonder if that's probably where he keeps his satanic rituals.
And he does his satanic
rituals. I mean,
his pentagrams.
He could be mad, but why couldn't he have been satanic Sam DiStefano?
Really? Yeah, that would have been better. But those mob guys, they're Catholic. They don't really believe in that satanic stuff, I don't think. But Mad Sam, or Sam DiStefano, he was a native-born American. His father came over here from Italy in the early 1900s. He grew up on the streets of Chicago and Little Italy of Chicago, around Western and Taylor probably, or west of downtown Chicago, west of the Loop. He joined a real well-known gang called the 42 Gang, which was led at the time by future outfit boss Salvatore Sam Giancana, or Momo. This 42 gang, if you remember, they were kind of like the B team for the outfit. The outfit needed some enforcement work done. They needed Al Capone's outfit. Noticed these young guys were aggressive and didn't mind breaking a law or two every now and then. They'd use them to drive their trucks and their bootlegging business and deliver beer and alcohol and help on runs down from Canada, I'm sure, and me just kind of general all around flunkies to take care of business. You know, they also fenced their goods. These guys did a lot of burglaries, and they would fence their goods and make money off of them that way. And Giancana went into the mob and started rising up, and he's the one that's responsible to bring Sam DiStefano in, and then he brings his brothers, Mario and Michael. And this Sam DiStefano, Michael was not really cut out to be a mob guy, and he was weak, and he was a heroin addict, and he was told to do something about his brother. And if you remember what he did about his brother, Aaron?
Yeah, he killed him.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what they think.
Yeah, I think it's...
They're not sure because they found his body, and they found it really quick.
Right. He made sure whoever killed this kid, Michael DiStefano, made sure that the body did not have a chance to decompose, and the body was very clean when they found it and in decent clothes. So,
and it wasn't shot in the head.
And wasn't shot in the head, which is a certain respect. But now we're going to get into some, you know, he did some crazy things. He kidnapped some guy and forced the guy to have sex with his wife, DiStefano's wife, because he was mad at his wife, and did some crazy stuff like that.
Put a gun in her mouth with no bullets in it,
right,
and told her to pull the trigger.
know, and you know, she probably was singing that song, "You Make Love and Fun," after that was over, don't you imagine?
I'd be glad if I was her and he brings some other guy to make love to me.
Brad, it's better than having the gun stuck in my mouth and tell me to pull the trigger on it. The crazy son of a bitch.
Whatever goes
like
off
this.
Isn't going to kill me.
Really? Well, probably one of the most famous, one of the two most famous crimes that he's suspected being involved in, and one is pretty well known. There's a loan shark, weighed 300 pounds. His name was William Jackson. They called him Action Jackson. I think there was a movie titled Action Jackson, some kind of a cartoon hero or something. And Jackson was up and was called by the FBI to come up to Milwaukee. You know, Milwaukee is just a hop, skip, and a jump north of Chicago. And he had to meet with the FBI up in Chicago or up in Milwaukee. And I guess he didn't tell any of his mob bosses he was up there. And someone happened to see him up there at the federal building. And they just were assuming that he was sneaking off to start ratting people out. And he knew a lot. He was a loan shark under our boy, Sam DiStefano. Well, DiStefano used somebody else probably and called Mr. Jackson to the Chicago meatpacking plant. And he was met by a crew who then took him into custody, shall we say, hung him up with a meat hook impaled up inside of his rectum. And they started working out on him. They kept this guy alive for 3 days. They smashed his knees with a sledgehammer. They worked over his body with a blowtorch. They beat his genitals with and they used an electric prod on it. And finally, he died from his injuries, and they stuck him in the trunk of a Cadillac car. You know, a Cadillac Eldorado was maybe the only car that was big enough to put Action Jackson in and hold him. There are several famous photos out there on the internet of this, and there's one of that show shall we say, his testicles, and they're just swollen up to the size of grapefruits hanging down there between his legs. They're pretty horrific pictures. I found the other one of him in the trunk of the car, and you can see where he's all bloody around his rectum, but I couldn't find that picture of his balls all swollen up. But it was bad. It was really bad.
Good thing that they weren't the size of lemons, because DiStefano might have put them on his car.
Put him on his car and drove around and said, "This car's a lemon."
Somebody be like, "Wait a second, those aren't lemons; those are grapefruits." Now,
you know,
that seems pretty. I mean, you would need a couple guys to pick a guy up that's 300 pounds.
You'd need probably three or four guys.
Yeah, let alone to
manhandle him.
Yeah, to lift him up high enough to put him on a meat hook by the
course,
rectum.
Probably the meat hook was on a winch that came down closer to the ground, and then they could hook it in there and then pull it up. Man, I tell you what, and 300 pounds all hanging on that, just that right there would be enough to kill you.
That got to hurt.
And you know, the sad thing actually, about this, he wasn't ratting anybody out. He wasn't snitching. They killed him for nothing, really.
Well, they killed him because he went into a federal building and they thought that he was meeting with some people to give him information. I was going to say the old joke, rectum damn near killed him.
Rectum damn near killed him. Oh, that's a good one there. Yeah, we need a drum roll for that one, I think.
Unfortunately, they did kill him.
Unfortunately, they did. Unfortunate for Mr. Jackson. He's wishing he would have snitched and gone into witness protection program. That's what you get for being a stand-up guy, I guess. See, you know, it's part of the game they play.
They don't give you a lot of room, do they? I mean, they work him over for 3 days. He goes, "I didn't tell him anything."
Really?
They keep working him over. 3 days. I didn't tell him anything.
Well, that's Mad Sam. He was getting off during those 3 days.
At some point, I don't know, what would you tell the people besides that you did rat him out?
Yeah. I mean, I hope they go ahead and kill you.
Yeah, only on the hopes that they would
actually
kill you then.
That might have been what happened, is he finally just, okay, I did, hoping they'd go ahead and kill him, and then they got madder and continued to torture him.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, you're like, okay, let me break your kneecaps with a sledgehammer. Are you ratting on us? No. Other kneecap? No. How about a cattle prod to the testicles? Still not ratting on us.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know, man.
At what point are they going to finally say, maybe we do believe that he didn't rat on us?
I don't know.
Maybe they just didn't care at that point.
I think they didn't care at that point.
They must have gotten some information or somebody from above.
He might have been unlikable anyhow. Who knows? And then Mad Sam was just getting off on it, more than likely. It's kind of strange. I've heard of a lot of things, but that is a bad one. That's crazy. Now, remember the movie Casino? And at the very beginning of it, the Joe Pesci character has got a guy's head in his vise, and he's screaming at him to tell him something, and he's tightening the vise on him.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? Well, see, the Joe Pesci character, God, I can't all of a sudden, I know that name as well as I know my own, but he was, the character was based on Tony Spilotro, who was in Las Vegas at that time. And but back in the early days when Tony Spilotro got going, if you remember, I said last time that Mad Sam had taken Tony in and mentored him, and he was one of his juice loan collectors and enforcers. And there were two guys, the Eminem brothers, they called them Billy McCarthy and Jimmy Miraglia. Maybe Miraglia, I would pronounce in Italian, usually don't pronounce the hard G, so Miraglia. Jimmy Miraglia. God, you guys that can pronounce these words real good are all laughing at me right now.
But was he Italian or Italian?
He was Italian. Yes, he was Italian. Anyhow, these two dudes were burglars, and they were tough guys. Well, these guys, the Eminem brothers, they both owed juice loans to Mad Sam. So Accardo reaches out to Mad Sam and says, okay, you know these guys, you got to do something about them. He had three collectors working for him at the time, and Mad Sam gave them the job of taking care of this. And I think he probably helped them a little bit himself. Charles Nicoletti, Phil Alderesio, Milwaukee Phil is what they called him, and Tony Spilotro. They found Billy McCarthy and kidnapped him. They started torturing him to find out the name of his accomplice. I think they already knew it, but they kept that they wanted to verify for sure it was Jimmy Miraglia. Spilotro put his head in a vise. He truly did this. I know. I think maybe Frank Culotta even has. He wasn't there, but he helped set him up. Oh yeah, Tony Spilotro told the story to Frank Culotta later on, and Frank told the authorities whenever he'd went in the witness protection program. And Spilotro actually helped set one of them up, got him to go meet some of these guys someplace. And so while Spilotro's got his head in the vise, he's asking him who his partner was. Spilotro claims or told Culotta that one of his eyes popped completely out of its socket. And at that point in time, he told Spilotro his accomplice's name. Now, shortly after that, they found Jimmy, the other of the Eminem brothers. They found Jimmy and just immediately killed him. Now, it's known on the streets that Mad Sam was not happy about that. He wanted to bring him in and torture him for a little bit.
Did they say if the vice happened to be in Mad Sam's basement?
You know, there's not word on that. There's not word on that. Probably if it had been, there would have been word on that. I think maybe he sent them out with the directions to torture this guy and then come back and tell him about it. Because Spilotro did tell people about it, and he told this to Frank Culotta also. He said, boy, he said, and he was talking about Charles Nicoletti, one of the other guys that was in this. He said, man, he said, this guy was a heartless dude. He said he was eating some pasta when Billy's eye popped out.
No, Spilotro.
Spilotro was impressed by Charles Nicoletti's reactions. As Spilotro's cranking the vise tighter and tighter, and when the eye pops out, he tells his buddy Frank Culotta about Nicoletti's reaction. He said, man, this is a heartless guy. He said he was eating pasta when Billy's eye popped out. It's a hard world here, Aaron. This is a tough world, man. Culotta also told the authorities after he came into witness protection about a time he was with Mad Sam, and Frank wants to go talk to a lawyer who he doesn't think is doing right, and Mad Sam goes along with him, and all of a sudden Mad Sam just goes crazy and starts yelling and screaming at the lawyer and told the lawyer, if you don't take care of the guy on this case like he said he would, he said, I'll do it. Then he started calling him names and grabbing him and threatening him, and then he zipped down his pants and just started peeing on the lawyer. the lawyer's like shaking in his boots by them, and Mad Sam stops, and Galata says the lawyer actually says thank you to Mad Sam for thanks for not killing me as they walked out. That he was the meanest and probably the biggest loan shark in Chicago during the 50s, 60s, and up into the 70s when he was actually ended up going out of the business, shall we say. He loved the work. He probably liked the collecting on the debts more than he liked making the money.
Well, apparently he liked urinating. Because if he didn't do it in a cop's coffee mug or an FBI agent mug. He was doing it to an attorney.
Yeah. It was just his way of showing his disgust for certain people. Here's another one where he didn't kill the guy, but he humiliated the shit out of him. One of his collectors, a guy named Peter Capoletti, had run off with $25,000 that was actually, he got it from a loan shark victim, from a debtor. He got to $25,000 and he's supposed to take it to Mad Sam, and he ran off with the money.
You know, if you're going to steal from somebody like Mad Sam,
you would want to go farther than Wisconsin. He went to Wisconsin.
Oh, I didn't even see that. I was just thinking $25,000. I mean, even if it was in the 70s, not going to last you a lifetime. And these guys don't forget.
Well, here's how bad Mad Sam was.
He goes to Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, yeah. Well, Wisconsin's a,
is he in
the Dells
or something?
Yeah, it's kind of a hideout for those mob guys in Chicago. Is it so close? They don't want to get too far from home. Mad Sam, he sets up a deal. There's a restaurant. They find Capoletti and bring him back. He chains him to a radiator in the back of this restaurant and tortures him for 3 days. He likes that three-day thing. There's a banquet that at the end of this 3 days, there's a banquet going on out front with a bunch of this guy's relatives out there at that banquet. And Capoletti is in the back and he's begging him, said, kill me, please. And supposedly he said, I'm on fire. And DiStefano said, okay, we need to put that fire out then, don't we? So he had a couple of his guys drag. He'd been using the blowtorch on him. He dragged a severely burned Capoletti out in the dining area where the man's family was at this banquet, and then forced them to all pee on him and use it in order to put the fire out, shall we say. Following the banquet, authorities report that the family paid back the $25,000 in stolen money. This guy is just, I don't even know the word. Do you know a word to describe this guy, Aaron? Vicious, mean.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like
trying to think of one word that would encompass everything.
You're like this. It's so odd that this guy's family would be in a banquet at the same restaurant.
Well, he set up the deal. Oh, he knew they were going to be there. Yeah.
So he took them to that restaurant and chains them to the radiator, and they show up for their banquet three days later.
He knew the bank was going to be there, and he took the guy to that restaurant more than likely.
I mean, at the point that you drag the guy out into the banquet where the family's at.
Yeah.
They obviously stop.
Yeah.
And then he makes them all pee on the guy. He really has a fetish for that.
He does. He wants his money
back. He probably
would
have voted for Donald Trump.
He probably
allegedly
would have. Allegedly.
But.
Oh, yeah, the golden showers.
Yeah,
he probably liked
showers.
I forgot about the golden showers.
But, I mean, at that point, you've got an awful lot of witnesses.
Who's going to testify against Mad Sam in this subculture, huh? Huh? You have to be willing to give up your life. You have to be willing to go into witness protection program. And then you're going to, and your whole family would have to go in because he'd go around and start killing off your family.
Yeah, well, if I was the family, I'd go to Capoletti and start asking him where the $25,000
exactly
was first, because I don't got it.
Or I'd get together and go get Mad Sam and just kill him. Probably everybody would be happy about that. Well, November 1963, year I graduated from high school, actually, DiStefano has a violent argument with a guy named Leo Foreman, who's a real estate agent, and one of his collectors. He works for him. Foreman won't take any crap off DiStefano, and he physically throws him out of his office, but then he knows he's in trouble. So he goes into hiding. He gets Tony Spilotro and another one of his loan collectors who thugs that are working for him to go get a hold of this Leo Foreman and said, you know, boss said, bygone, let bygones be bygones and come on back. All's well. Let's kiss and make up. So he gets taken in by this and Sam's brother Mario, if you remember, I mentioned the one brother they killed, Michael, but Mario was a pretty decent outfit guy himself, was tough enough, was up for the job, and he was up for several jobs. He kind of participated in this. They used his home. And Foreman went to his home thinking that he was going to meet up with Bad Sam and they were going to patch everything up. But once they got there, they got him down in the basement of Mario DiStefano's home. He was grabbed, and Mario and a guy named Chucky Grimaldi and Tony Spilotro tied him up, and they started beating him up to soften him up a little bit. They knew Mad Sam was on the way. Of course, they beat him on the head and knees and nuts and everything.
With a hammer.
With a hammer, but they didn't want to kill him. And finally, when Mad Sam got there, he used an ice pick and stabbed him about 20 times. And Grimaldi, who was a witness of this and later turned government witness, said that DiStefano screamed and giggled at his. He told Foreman, "I told you I'd get you. Greed just got you killed." Foreman was pleading for his life, and finally DiStefano shoots him repeatedly in the buttocks. He didn't shoot him in the head or in the, heart or, vital organs. He shoots him in the buttocks just to cause him more pain. And Grimaldi said that DiStefano just watched, and the rest of Spilotro and just Grimaldi. Watched this. Grimaldi was the one talking. Watched Foreman bleed and whimpering for a while, and then they started torching him with a butcher knife. They started cutting chunks of flesh out of his arms until finally he dies during this time. They turned this Chucky Grimaldi, and so Tony Spilotro and Sam and Mario DiStefano were indicted for the murder of Leo Foreman. Grimaldi's going to testify against him. It's a co-defendant testifying against you. Mad Sam's making a circus of the proceedings, acting as his own attorney as usual. This is one where he's got a big, he has some kind of an operation, like a hernia operation, and he pulls up his shirt and shows the jury all his stitches and scars and stuff. He is just goofy as hell.
This was in May of 1973.
Yeah.
And the actual argument was in November of 63.
See, and there's no statute of limitations on murder, and they didn't turn Chucky until 1972. It's kind of how that works. Good. I'm glad you caught me on that one.
I just saw that and I was thinking, it was a long time for him to Chucky probably participating until he decided, I'm going to get ice picked.
Probably more than likely when they turn like that, they figured that they're next up on the hit list, so they better go in. Well, by this point in time, even the outfit just says, this guy's too nuts. We got to do something about him. They end up getting out on bail. When Sam comes into court, some of the preliminary hearings, he would demand to speak through a bullhorn. He would appear at the courtroom in pajamas. He'd have him haul him in on a stretcher. He would do long-winded rants. He would do things like he would yell stuff like, the investigators that are doing this are colluding with Joseph Stalin. And of course, he was alienating the judge and the jury. And that was a huge, really high profile event. And Spilotro and his brother, he was hurting them because they were also on trial for this whole deal. With the approval, it had to be with the approval of Giancana and Anthony Accardo. His own brother, Mario, and Tony Spilotro devised a plan to keep him quiet for good. This Chucky Grimaldi is gone in the witness protection program, and he's testifying against him. And without Chucky Grimaldi, they probably will walk on it.
Wait, so when Chucky turns informant,
yeah,
then he basically fingers Tony Spilotro and Mario
and Mario Sam. And Mad Sam. They all got a case.
They all catch the case.
And it's based on Grimaldi testifying against him.
So
the outfit says, this guy's acting so crazy and drawing so much attention, they've just had enough, and they're saying, we got to do something about him. So if you remember, we suspect Mad Sam killed his other brother, Michael, or had him killed, and probably killed him or took part in it. Now, his own brother Mario and Tony Spilotro are making plans to kill Mad Sam. I mean, this is just crazy.
Well, maybe crazier if you think about it. Mario potentially could have been involved in the death of his own brother as well.
He could, yeah, he could. He probably was, actually. Probably Mad Sam didn't do it without the approval and maybe even the help of the other brother. Because they said, you know, it's been reported that this Mario was, he was just as mean and cruel and sadistic as Mad Sam. He just wasn't crazy about it.
Now, maybe, here's a thought.
Yeah.
Maybe Sam wasn't actually just a psychopath or sociopath. Maybe he had like manic depression.
Well, maybe so. Maybe he was. Maybe he just needed a little Zoloft or some maybe he's like Tony Soprano. He just needed to go see this psychiatrist or psychologist once every 2 or 3 weeks and take some antidepressants.
Yeah, some lithium.
Some lithium or something, you know, some good drugs. I don't know. I don't think anything would. I think only the drugs they give you down at the death house would have ever straightened Mad Sam out.
Well, so then how does Mario and Tony
get
Sam to come with them?
They tell him that they found where Chucky Grimaldi is being hidden by the authorities and that they paid off the policemen who are guarding him. So Sam said Sam was ecstatic. He was thinking about the fun he'd have exacting some revenge on Mr. Grimaldi, the stool pigeon. Mad Sam and Mario, his brother Mario and Tony Spilotro all get together. And so the time comes, they tell him they're going to come and pick him up. And they're going to go, they know where Mad Sam, where Chucky is being held. Mad Sam is out in his driveway, in his garage, waiting for him to come up. Mario drives up in the driveway with Tony Spilotro. They walk up to him and into the garage, and as soon as they get close to him, Mario steps aside, and Tony Splatro's got a double-barreled sawed-off shotgun. He's been hiding underneath his coat. He just pulls up and fires both barrels at him. First shot blew off Mad Sam's one of his arms, and the second one hit him full in the chest, and he was dead before he hit the ground. April 14th, 1973, Mad Sam is no longer, but his skills, of course, were passed on to Tony the At Spilotro. Now, Spilotro and his brother, Mario, ended up getting acquitted in this Leo Foreman murder trial. And after that, the rest is history with Spilotro. I'm not sure what happened to Mario, the other brother. I'd have looked that up before I did this show.
I wonder how they got acquitted.
Well,
I mean,
you
if
know,
they had Grimaldi as a key witness.
With Mad Sam gone, Grimaldi might have
recanted, have
laid everything off onto Mad Sam and minimized on Spilotro. You never know how these deals come down.
Yeah, when they find out that Mad Sam's dead and they come back to court, maybe he's like, well, it was Mad Sam that did it.
Plus, if this might be the case I'm thinking of, Tony Spilotro and several other Chicago outfit people were acquitted in murder trials in Chicago because they just bought off the judge. Here's what the judge would do. The attorney, Spilotro's attorney, would ask for a bench trial, not a jury trial. Judge would approve that. The prosecutor can't ask for a jury trial. If the defendant doesn't want one, he wants to be tried by a judge. They bought off the judge, and Tony Spilotro bought off the judge on at least one murder trial. This may have been the murder trial that he bought off on.
Well, certainly he would buy him off on his own murder trial.
I was thinking it was a murder trial on killing the Eminem twins, but it might have been this one. Or maybe he bought him off on both of them. Anyhow, that's the story of Mad Sam DiStefano, and this isn't a serial killer, but he's damn close to it. He's no Bob Berdella. He didn't hold him for 3 days and stick carrots up their butt, but he held him for 3 days and beat their genitals and stick. Well, he did. He sticked a hook up that one guy's butt and hauled him up and held him up there. So he is just as bad as Bob Berdella.
Well, and he is reported to be
doing it for money.
A Satanist.
Bob Berdella. Satanist, and so was Bob Berdella. Maybe they knew each other.
Maybe they both had manic depression.
And both had manic depression. I think they were both just nuts.
I'm just kind of wondering, so then Tony Spilotro, who that is pretty legendary in the mob world, his names go. Mario, the brother of Mad Sam, steps to the side. Tony blows away Mad Sam DeStefano.
Yeah.
And his brother just stands by and they continue to work together.
Yeah, oh yeah. They walk off and, I mean, these are brothers that killed their other brother, so, you know, that
he probably figured he had it coming.
Their allegiance was more to the outfit than it was to their family in this case. That's how nuts, they were just nuts. There is no explanation for a family like this or people like this. You imagine what their childhood must have been like? I bet their dad was one mean sucker.
Yeah, I bet he probably made them stock groceries.
All right, this gets us to the time when I'd make my public service announcement. If you have a friend or relative who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say folks need to rent the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, which is available on Amazon. $7 to own. Was it $2 to rent?
Yeah, $1.99 to rent, and was it $7.99 to download to own it?
To own it. But something like that. As great as that is, what you really need to do is spend a little extra money and get the autographed copy of the DVD.
Just make a $25 donation, and I'll send you one.
It's actually got outtakes and extras that aren't available on the streaming version.
Plus, you'll get 3 PDF files of wiretap affidavits and one of an affidavit Ken Ito gave describing the hierarchy of the Chicago outfit and who was who and who did what. Plus, you'll get 5 links to 5 unpublished episodes of Gangland Wire.
Exclusive episodes that are only available for folks that make that donation. And if you're really interested in the mob and Kansas City, which is, of course, the heart of America, and has a great mob history connecting to Chicago, connecting to Las Vegas, Milwaukee, New York, even at times, what you want to do is download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. For $1.99, you could come to Kansas City, if you don't already live here, and take your own personal tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City, listening to some of the great podcasts from Gangland Wire while you're doing it. And then what you want to do is get the book that Gary just published.
I forgot about that. You can get that for a $35 donation and all those other things. You'll get the book, the movie, and the links and affidavits and everything.
From the mouth of the men that did it, right. Gangland Wire.
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron.
Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Twitter at Odd-O-Matic Music.
Bang! I got shot in the head.
Who do you believe ordered the hit on you, Mr. Ito?
Vincent Solano.
On the advice of my lawyer, I respectfully refuse to answer that question, as my truthful answer may tend to incriminate me.